I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Lowe!
Rugby Weekly.
Little reverse pass. Oh!
The 42 Rugby Weekly Extra. There has been more squad rotation here at the 42. Gavin Cooney stepping in to fill the presenter's chair this morning. Rotation 2, as you may well know, in Joe Schmidt's Ireland team to face Russia on Thursday morning. He named it this morning, 7 a.m. Irish time. 11 changes in all, with Jonathan Sexton returning to start at 8.5 and captain Ireland for the first ever time. We're going to talk to Murray Kinsella from Kobe in just a moment, but I'm going to run through the team selection that Joe Schmidt has put out for this game. Rob Kearney starts at fullback, having passed HIA 1 from the weekend. Andrew Conway and Keith Earls are on the wing, either side of a centre partnership of the returning Bundy Aki. And Gary Ringrose starts for the third time in a row in this tournament. As we mentioned, Jonathan Sexton is the captain at 8.5, with Luke McGrath, his Leinster colleague, at 9. It's an all-Munster front row. Dave Kilcoyne, Niall Scannell, with John Ryan at tight head. Tadhg Byrne and John Klein are in the second row. Reece Ruddock is at 6. Peter O'Mahony is at 7. And Jordy Murphy steps off a plane to fill the number 8 jersey. On the bench, Sean Cronin, Andrew Porter, Tadhg Furlong, Ian Henderson, CJ Stander, Joey Carberry, Jack Carty and Jordan Lammer. Joey Carberry expected to cover scrum half. As we mentioned, Murray Kinsella has just stepped out of the Irish press conference with Joe Schmidt and Johnny Sexton and joins us from his Airbnb in Kobe. Murray, I guess we'll start with Jonathan Sexton. How significant is it that he captains Ireland, even though Peter O'Mahony is in the pack?
I think it's rather significant, yeah, given what has happened in the past few days and the defeat to Japan and Ireland suddenly being on the back foot. The expectation certainly was that Peter O'Mahony, if he's in the starting team, would captain Ireland. That's the way it's gone in the relatively recent past. And O'Mahony is the player, obviously, with more experience of captaining Ireland. But Johnny Sexton's the one to take over in this game. And it just feels kind of symbolic to me, or it feels like a big moment, because Sexton is going to be the key driver if Ireland are going to turn around this World Cup and recover from the shock defeat, drive into those quarterfinals, and then hopefully from there make a bit of history for themselves. He is like a relentless driver of standards in the squad. His physicality is just relentless as well on the pitch, and he's obviously the main tactical leader and the guy who implements Joe Schmidt's game plans down to a T. So he's always been a leader. He's one of the vice captains in this squad. He obviously captained Leinster last season, but as you mentioned, hasn't been named an Irish captain of a team before this point. We spoke to him in the press conference, and he seems to be quite proud of it, and understandably so. He said he's actually done a lot of things in his career to try and get to this point. It's been an ambition for him, and his family are obviously going to be really proud as well. So he's going to be more determined than ever, really, and I think Schmidt understands that. He knows that Sexton will come back in and not accept what happened last weekend against Japan and drive an improved performance. And he's going to probably get even more on top of that by making him captain and allowing him to lead that way. So, yeah, I definitely think it is significant.
Mm. Obviously, Joe Schmidt won't say this outright, but you've been around the camp for so long and you've been embedded in it for so long. Have you got any vibes at all from Joe Schmidt or any of the rest of the Irish camp that perhaps the Jonathan Sexton played in that game against Japan, that, you know, 20-minute collapse from the 20-minute mark may not have happened?
Yeah, I think they will certainly think that. I certainly think that myself. That's my personal opinion. I think if he's on the pitch, they would have had a greater sense of control, as the momentum, to be fair to Japan, they were involved in that momentum shift. They did a lot of good things and a lot of superb things, really, with their attack and shut Ireland's attack down with their defence. But I think Ireland, with his experience, his tactical nous, as I mentioned, his decision-making and his understanding of how momentum can shift so quickly in test matches, that would have been really invaluable. And he has been at the heart of pretty much every big win and every big success that Ireland have had. He's been there and the heartbeat of it, the leader of it, even without captaining. So I think Schmidt would probably... Yeah, I think in hindsight, he would probably feel that if Sexton had been on the pitch, it wouldn't have gone to the extent it did in terms of that momentum shift.
Is he fit enough to kick a goal in this game?
He is, according to himself. He said he did a bit of goal kicking yesterday. I mean, they've only had one training session today between the two games. Obviously, a 5-day turnaround really puts a stress on them. So most of the players actually took the full day off yesterday. I think some of them were up in Universal Studios in Harry Potter land, and they seem to be enjoying themselves. Others went down to Kyoto, or up to Kyoto rather, and had a look at the markets up there. I think Keane Healy went to a knife making expert with Peter O'Mahony. That's their thing. So everyone got out of camp, which was probably a good thing in hindsight, because Joe Schmidt after a defeat is pretty relentless with his demands and his desire to do more and more analysis. So that was a good thing for them. But Sexton did do a bit of goal kicking and did the same again after the session today. So according to him, he's gonna be in charge of that, the place kicking. And again, that's an important aspect of his game. And it seems like he's overcome that quad issue, or we don't know exactly what it was. They reported it as a quad issue, and he's gonna kick for goal.
Yeah, so we will return to the less important subject of Sexton in a minute, but did you say ice making?
Knife making, sorry, knife making. Kean Healy is big into making knives. He has a little shed in the back of his garden, and he spends a lot of time on it. So Peter O'Mahony is into all things hardware and home making, and that's his thing as well. So they went up, I'm not sure exactly where it was, but they got on a train and went to this master kind of knife maker and had a great day out by all accounts. So it was good for them to do a bit of that, and obviously they want to enjoy the country as well as kind of wallow in the self-pity and the regrets of last weekend. So probably helped them just shift the mood a little bit to get out and do those kind of things.
Okay, well I will rescue that god awful question by saying that the knives will be sharpening for Joe Schmidt in Ireland if they don't beat Russia with a four try bonus point. Andy Dunn of this parish, Murray, was on Irish TV last night saying that playing Sexton in this game is actually a bit of a risk given, you know, his injury profile throughout the tournament and the fact that we should be able to beat Russia with four tries without him. I mean, what's your opinion on that? Do you think that this is an unnecessary risk, or do we absolutely have to get Sexton back in this team?
I think he needs another game before the quarterfinal, and their plan, this is their plan, that he was going to play in this game and then take next weekend, almost certainly take that off against Samoa, and Carty and Carberry will kind of guide the team at 10 and 22 in that sense. That was how they were going to go with it, and I definitely think he needs another game before a quarterfinal. If he sits this out and then potentially sits out the Samoa game, where Joe Schmidt would be even more worried about him getting an injury, and we saw what happened in the last World Cup and they're still scarred by that last France game in the pool stage, where they obviously had to get to a peak and they won impressively, but it cost them so much in terms of the physical toll, one of those being Sexton, and he missed the quarterfinal then. So that's fresh in Joe Schmidt's mind. And while I do think they have to protect Sexton as their most valuable player, he also needs to get rhythm on the pitch, and he has to actually play and get up to form in that sense as well. So for me, it's the right decision. Like, I don't know exactly where he is in terms of percentage with his physical health, but if it was a big risk, they wouldn't be playing him in this. They wouldn't risk putting him out, say, for the tournament or aggravating or tearing a muscle. They obviously have an understanding that he's okay for this game, and then I think you'll see him pulled out again for the Samoa game. To me, it makes a lot of sense.
One player who's got plenty of playing experience at this World Cup so far is Gary Ringrose. I think this is his seventh start for Ireland since the 10th of August. He's playing because, well, Murray, I'm going to ask you the question that a lot of people are asking, like, where is Robbie Henshaw?
Yeah, I wrote about this morning, about Henshaw being carried by Ireland essentially for 4 weeks. So Ringrose started the three games in 12 days at the World Cup. He played in all four warm-up games, but he came off the bench in two of those. It is still a lot of minutes to rack up, and certainly you would imagine that he's feeling the effects. He was one of the most impressive players against Japan, really busy workload. Same against Scotland, he was all over the place, and I'd imagine the meters he's run are really high. This is the risk they made, the risk they kind of accepted by keeping Henshaw in Japan. You know, their first training session when they arrived, he tears his hamstring. We can say definitively now that he had a tear, probably high grade one, if not even grade two, because it keeps him out for 4 weeks. So they obviously decided, listen, we're going to carry him. We have three other centres. But then Chris Farrell picks up a confirmed concussion against Japan, and he's now out of this weekend. So Gary Ringrose has got to go again. Joe Schmidt did say, look, it is a bit of a risk, but Gary Ringrose is feeling super. I don't know how super he's feeling after quite a bit of rugby. He's still a young guy, I guess, and players always want to play, but that is a risk to expose him again in such a short time frame to a match. Robbie Henshaw is going to be back for the Samoa game. That's Joe Schmidt's words today. I know they've essentially lied about him for the last couple of weeks and strung everyone along, saying, oh, he could play in the Japan game, when there wasn't a hope in hell that he was going to feature in that game. But from what I hear, he will be back for that Samoa game and then into a quarterfinal. I guess it just underlines how important Henshaw is in Schmidt's eyes, because with a lot of players, you get a hamstring tear in the first training session out in Japan, you're going home and someone else is getting called up. But, you know, Schmidt spoke about it today, about how important Henshaw has been. And I had it in my piece as well, just about the last World Cup. Schmidt remembers him playing so well in that France game. He was the dominant figure in midfield and probably in the whole entire backline battle between the two teams. He's been really central to a lot of their big successes under Schmidt in the last number of years. And he's a bit of a kind of defensive leader for them. We saw how good he was when he got on the pitch against Wales in that final warm-up game, having had a bit of a delayed return in the preseason. So it's quite clear that he is an excellent test player and that Schmidt really rates him as a key figure for this World Cup. And it is kind of crazy. You may only play the final pool game and then you're starting a quarter final, but that almost looks like it could be the case, particularly if Schmidt wants to go with his most physical centre pairing in midfield for that potential. You know, if you're playing the box, you need a lot of size and power. Now, I'd nearly always have Ringrose in there because of his guile and his inventiveness and his intelligence in defence. But if he's looking at Aki and Henshaw as a centre pairing for that game, it makes sense. So potentially Ringrose playing in this game is bad news for him. It remains to be seen how exactly Schmidt selects going forward, but it looks like Henshaw will be back against Samoa. And that's the risk they've taken. That's the decision they've made. And for all of the reasons I just mentioned, Henshaw is that important figure in Schmidt's mind.
Mm. Just before we move to the pack, who knew that Jonathan Sexton and Joey Carberry, the 9-10... Well, I didn't know it anyway. Jonathan Sexton and Joey Carberry are the 9-10 axis that we've been waiting for. Joey is on the bench to cover 9. Is he likely to come on, Murray, or is he just there, just like in break glass in case of emergency injury to Luke McGrath?
Yeah, I'd imagine it's the latter. Joe Schmidt says he's done a couple of reps at 9 and maybe he has, but I would imagine it's literally just an emergency situation. Luke McGrath's probably going to play 80. Maybe Carby will get a couple of minutes. I think it's more likely that he'll come on elsewhere in the back line, and I would say 15 or rather he'll come on for Rob Kearney. I'd say that'll be the most likely situation, and that would be really fascinating to see if it was Carberry and Sexton on the pitch at the same time. Now Carty obviously can cover and Sexton maybe off the pitch at that stage, but it would be cool to see those two link up. We spoke about it on our podcast with Owen Toolan, and he mentioned that, you know, if you're looking towards a quarter final, which Ireland maybe shouldn't be doing now, they should just focus on what's in front of them. But Carberry could be one of those players who could unlock a defence like the Springboks or even the All Blacks. He could add that something different from fullback, and it's always been an experiment I wondered why they hadn't done more of. He's flitted in and out of appearances at 15, moving back there in a couple of games. And obviously we've seen him play that role for Leinster in the very recent past. He adds real creativity and that second playmaker, allowing you to kind of attack both sides of the rucks or even link up with Sexton and have a really good decision maker a little bit further out the line to bring in the rest of the back three and your outside centre. So that'll be really interesting. Yeah, he's an emergency scrum half cover, and he did play there when he was younger. I think he was 18, maybe under 18 when he last played scrum half. So he has a little bit of experience, and I'd say his pass is still nippy enough. So yeah, emergency situation, he could do a job.
Yeah, just briefly to the pack, six of the eight are from Munster, but the sole Ulster representative is Geordie Murphy, who has more or less stepped off a plane and right into this team. Is there any concern that he's not quite ready and that he'll take a little bit of time to acclimatise, or does Joe think he's good to go for minute one?
Yeah, well, I'd probably have that concern. I can only imagine how difficult that is. Joe said he trained unbelievably well today. That was the quote. And Joe said, he mentioned that if you think about the kickoff time being 7:15 p.m. over here, he said, oh, that's nearly midday in Ireland, so we won't have to acclimatise too much. I don't know how that exactly works in terms of the strength and conditioning side of it. I think it's a real tough task for him to come in. But to be fair, Geordie Murphy really does know everything about this Ireland setup. He knows the plays. He knows exactly the kind of phase play structures that Schmidt wants, and he's been in and around this environment so much. He was obviously at the last World Cup and has again delivered for Ireland so many times when called on. He steps in at number 8, and you'd imagine he's more than capable of kind of thriving there against Russia. It'll be tough for him so soon after arriving. He only got in to join the squad yesterday. I think he got a train down or flew down from Tokyo, so he's barely had chance to settle in, and he's straight into a starting team. But I guess he'll have the weekend off after that to look forward to.
Yeah. Now, look, we won't ponder the Japan game for much longer because, you know, our various psychiatrists have told us not to. But you were saying that at Joe's presser, he was told by World Rugby that, yeah, we were a little bit shafted by Angus Gardner in that game.
Yeah, he kind of went to that straight away. He was asked, what have you learned from the defeat? He said, we've learned that we're capable. You know, we go up 12-3 in the first 20 minutes. And then from there, he went to, I'll read out the quote, actually said, "We were penalised for offside 4 times and we've now got the feedback that 3 of those were incorrect calls. People were asking us about our discipline. It's pretty hard to get off the line onto the front foot when you're getting those calls against you. 2 of them were from an AOR, as in assistant ref, who is going to be refereeing us on Thursday. So we know we're going to have to be on our best behaviour." He's speaking about Jerome Garces, the assistant ref there, who called in 2 of those. So yeah, he's just underlining to everyone that Angus Gardner maybe shafted them on a couple of the calls. There were definitely others where Joe Schmidt was livid about them. They had nine penalties in total, and you know, from his point of view, it wasn't a realistic figure. So he's kind of snapping back at everyone there who questioned their discipline. And it is interesting, I guess, that he hounded World Rugby until they gave him that clarification that they were incorrect calls. But in his mind, that'll kind of ease the pressure on himself, and he'll think, oh, if we hadn't conceded those penalties, we would have been in better positions on the pitch and the game wouldn't have gone the way it did. I would also imagine that he's being realistic about how poor his team were, how much access into the game they gave Japan with their own errors, and I'd imagine that the pain of that defeat will live long in the memory. They tend to with Joe Schmidt, and that's probably the biggest shock of them all, and he won't be quick in getting over that game. Just interesting to hear him bring up the ref again, because
you
kind of wondered why he was talking about Gardner beforehand. 2 days before this match, he had a go at him, and now he's kind of having a bit of a snipe at Jerome Garces there as well, and you wonder if that's the best policy.
Yeah, there was a piece, I think it was by Alison Miller in the Irish Indo after the Japan game, that was talking about the fact that Schmidt had mentioned Angus Gardner in the lead up to that game, and said, you know, when you talk about him, that's putting unnecessary pressure on him, and only human, he might, you know, referee you more harshly as a result of that. So why is Schmidt doing this again with Garces? Like, I mean, can he just not help himself? I thought that he would be very pragmatic and well thought out in this, but maybe he's more human than maybe we give him a bit of credit for.
Yeah, I think in his mind he's putting pressure on for them to be really accurate. I would suggest it's the opposite as well, to be honest. I was kind of writing about that last week in the preview. You're kind of wondering, why has he made this decision to criticize the referee? I think his concern was that, you know, Japan are the host nation, a hometown referee kind of job, and obviously that happens. Like, it's statistically proven that happens in sport, but I just feel it's not a good policy to heat that pressure on. He's really hot on the whole refereeing and World Rugby. Like, we could spend an hour talking about all that kind of stuff. He's really keeping pressure on World Rugby around the high tackle stuff. And he came out with that when they were over in their camp in Portugal, kind of questioning the direction they're going in that. And I know that his feedback to them on refereeing performances is absolutely in-depth. He's got page after page of review of each decision in each game, penalties that were missed, penalties that were wrongly given. And he spends a lot of his time focusing on that. And I often wonder, God, is he doing the right thing here, when he could be focusing on something else?
I find that absolutely amazing. So he's compiling dossiers and reports on referees and then submitting those to his bosses to say, you know, this guy should have done better in X, Y, and Z. Does anyone else do this?
Yeah, the referees, they do. They all, or sorry, the ref, head coaches all do this. Yeah, it's something that they spend varying amounts of time on, but they do tend to compile reports and send them back. By all accounts, though, Schmidt are by some distance the longest, most thorough, and most unforgiving. That's his method with it. Yeah, he. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder about the time he spends thinking about
that and the media and stressing about what people are writing about him, when you think, geez, just back your brilliant rugby brain and it'll work out all right.
Yeah. Now, conditions. I know you were in the stadium in Kobe for Scotland against Samoa. I think it's fair to say that the conditions in that stadium on Thursday are going to pose more of a challenge than Samoa will the weekend after. Like, the roof is closed. Why is that the case? And I guess it makes it pretty much like a sauna in there.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's crazy in there. Like, I haven't sweat so much during a game. I felt so sorry for the players. It was like a sauna. It was an absolute sweat box. And the players afterwards said it was so difficult. As soon as you walked out, you're dripping in sweat. So basically, in the England-Tonga game there were 41 turnovers conceded, i.e. a lot of those were the ball being dropped. And then last night with Samoa and Scotland, it was 34 or 35. So you're seeing that the game is really suffering because players can't catch the ball. They're even slipping underfoot. The policy basically is a World Rugby one. They've been doing this since 2003. If there is a roof, and we saw it at the last World Cup with the Principality or Millennium Stadium, if there's a roof, it gets closed, because they don't want teams getting into arguments tit for tat. You know, we want it open, we want it closed. I'm sure everyone's more than aware and more than tired of that debate every single year with the Principality Stadium. Yeah. So they felt, let's take it out of teams' hands.
And we'll make this decision ourselves. Yeah, you think, oh, maybe that actually makes sense. But then when you're in there, and just opening that roof would relieve some of the intense sweat, yeah. You think maybe they should just alter their policy here. So listen, Ireland have been well warned. I think they have to be really patient, because there are going to be errors early on. And when you're already kind of on the back foot, having lost to Japan, and you're a little bit stressed, they're going to have to be patient with that, and understand there'll be errors. Because Scotland, you know, took them until the 74th minute to get their bonus point against Samoa, and they were impressively patient amidst all those frustrating errors.
There was so much panic, Murray, when we were chasing the game in the last maybe 10 minutes against Japan. I mean, I think there were maybe three different incidents across the 80 minutes of Irish players just running directly into each other. Do you think that, like you say, like we will almost certainly beat Russia, we will be good enough to do that, but the conditions may mean that we will have to wait for that fourth try and make the bonus point. Do you trust Ireland to be cool enough in those last 10 or 15 minutes, if they still need another try or two, to chase it in the, you know, in the pragmatic right way and eventually get it?
Yeah, with Sexton back, there'll be, as I mentioned, that bit more calm, and yeah, you'd be absolutely shocked if they don't get it done here. This would be almost, if they don't get their bonus point here, it's almost the biggest shock as losing to Japan. It will be a disaster, because if they can get those two bonus points, then they're out of the pool, probably as at the top of the pool, and they get that quarterfinal against South Africa. I do think they'll be able to cope with the stress of it, but that is, like, longer term, looking towards a potential quarterfinal, that is the worry now with Ireland, is that their confidence has been dented by, now it's four kind of high profile defeats and underperformances this season. And we spoke about it on one of the other podcasts about how they were this consistent force who always, you could always rely on to deliver at least a solid, strong performance, if not outstanding. But now they've become this inconsistent force, and for me, I would theorize that that's very much a mental thing, and the confidence is a little bit more brittle, so that when things start slipping from them, they're less able to kind of compose themselves. That's a little bit of a worry longer term, but yeah, I'd be absolutely stunned if they don't get their bonus point in this game.
Okay, well, we might wrap it there. Murray, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you managed to... It is a rest day for everyone else, apart from maybe the journalists, so I do hope you might get a couple of hours rest at least, and maybe pop up to... Pop up to Harry Potter Land and follow the path trod by the Irish rugby players. Murray, thanks very much. Thank you to all of you who are listening, because you are our beloved 42 members, and your support makes all of this possible. So thank you very much for that. We're going to be back tomorrow with another podcast. Until then, take it easy.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moore!
Robbie Weekly.
Little reverse pass.